Welcome to our podcast. We're going behind the infamous blue signs of North Mississippi Health Services to connect you with important resources, hot topics, and information offered by our very own experts. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to check out Castos for more episodes.
Good afternoon. This is Diana Duffy with the Cybersecurity Group, and welcome to today's Cybersecurity Lunch and Learn. We are so thankful that you chose to spend this part of your day with us. Phil Alexander will be speaking to us today regarding why Russia wants to attack NMHS and you. If you have any questions, please type them in the chat at any time. There is a bit of a delay, so please allow a few seconds for a verbal or written response. And please welcome Phil Alexander, our CISO. Phil, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Diana. And thank you everyone as well for joining us today. As Diana said, I am the Chief Information Security Officer here at North Mississippi Health Services and excited to bring you this timely and relevant topic, as we all who are watching the news know that Russia has started to flex its muscles once again in Europe. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. So we'll dive right in. In order to understand why Russia or any adversary would want to hack into North Mississippi Health Services, or even you individually and your family, it's important to understand that the enemy themselves. So we're going to talk a little bit about today about the history of the USSR. We're going to talk a little bit about leadership, specifically Putin. We're going to try to understand a little bit about their resources, their economy, and of course, geography always plays into some of that. So we'll talk through some of those. We're going to learn the enemy in order to learn ourselves. This is the good old days, according to Russia, right? Back in the good old days, they used to be what we call Soviet Union or USSR. And so you see the light pink there, the countries, those were former Soviet bloc countries, part of the USSR or Soviet Union, what we call the Soviet Union. And they all broke away and left Russia separate. And so many people, many Russians, whether in Russia or even in some of these Soviet bloc countries, still long for those old days, especially the older generation, long for the good old days of the Soviet Union. Think about this kind of in the United States. For instance, Ukraine, I think, has been compared to about the size or a little bit smaller than the state of Texas. And so each of these countries being a state of USSR, just like we say USA, these would be states of that Soviet Union. And so that's how it was in the past, and then they broke up. So let's talk a little bit about Putin, Vladimir Putin, who is the president of Russia today. Vladimir Putin is, I think he's almost 70 now. He is from the old school. And you got to remember, we have to remember that many of the old crusty white folks that are running world governments right around the world are from old times when they remember the Cold War, for instance. They still remember and participated in when these countries were geographically a lot different. These are pre-World War II, sometimes, you know, right after World War I. So a lot of these folks still remember those days and lived them. And so their mentality is important when we talk about how they're reacting today or how they're acting and how we are to defend against them. So it's important that we understand that he was of that old school. He was also a KGB agent. So the KGB was kind of like our NSA or CIA, FBI kind of organizations. He was a spy. He's been linked to a number of assassinations and other things, political dissidents and things. And so he's of that old Cold War era. And during that era, of course, for many decades, the United States and Russia have been and continue to still be, not as much as it used to be, but we have continued to be arch enemies, but much more so back in the USSR days when they were truly a global world power, much more than they are today. And so he, just like anyone else, remembers those days and probably longs for those days to come back. As with anything, things boil down to money a lot of times, right? So when you think about why a country or a president or a dictator to do what they do, a lot of it has to do with economics. So if you think about the top oil producing countries, well, Russia is one of those, including the United States. We compete on the oil market. And yes, we do get some of our oil from Russia, but so do other European countries. And so those, our customer base are the same. They're a coal and natural gas producer, as well as iron and steel. These are all the same things that we have in common when it comes to a lot of those resources for economics. And so when you have that competition, not just from a world power playing from political stance, but it's economics. A lot of it has to do with economics. If you don't know, there was a large pipeline going from Russia to Germany, and it was going to supply something like 80% of all the natural gas into Germany. And it just recently got put on hold, but that pipeline was going to supply one of our great allies in Europe with natural gas. And so you could see the conflicts politically that would have created. So economics plays into this discussion as well. So now let's talk about geographics. Geography matters a lot. And when you think about the current situation in Ukraine, Russia invading Ukraine, it's important to look back historically on the geography of Europe and then look at what they have today and where they're at today and how we play into that. So I'm going to kind of take us down a little bit of memory lane first of all. This was generally about World War II, post-World War II. Western Europe stayed out of Eastern Europe. The United States, we started putting bases in France and Spain and Germany, the UK, Italy, Switzerland, Austria a little bit. We had troop presence in all of the major Western European countries, and we occupied those for many decades, including up until recently. We've pretty much moved most of them out of Spain and France and UK, Ireland, and even Germany. So I was stationed in Germany from 99 to 2004. We had a lot of bases, even during that time. Today, the base that I was stationed at is completely gone. There's no remnants of that base that even exists anymore. It's an industrial complex. Most of the bases in Germany have now been turned back over to the Germans. I think we have three. And so when you start doing that, you start removing your presence. You have two choices. You bring everybody home, close the bases down. And when we say this, it wasn't just overnight. This has been a slow process, a long, decades worth of movement. But we didn't do that. What we did, we started moving those troop presence into Eastern Europe. And so, for instance, I was stationed in Bosnia and Kosovo, Croatia. You look at Albania, Macedonia, I've been there as a soldier. And so Bulgaria in Sofia, a huge base, military base in Sofia, U.S. military. We've got troop presence in Romania, do a lot of training in the Romanian area. You see Estonia and Lithuania up top. And by the way, those are, if you remember, Lithuania, Estonia, some of those at the top there are former Soviet bloc countries that are now NATO allies. So let's talk NATO for just a second, because it's important to understand the makeup of those treaties that happened post-World War II. One of the treaties was called the NATO North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And that treaty brought together a lot of these countries, including the United States, by the way. We are a NATO member. And so NATO, or North Atlantic Treaty Organization, that organization is set up as a defensive mechanism against Russia, against Russian invasions, against any country that would try to rise up in Europe. And so we support that agreement that we've made for many, many decades. But as you can tell, Russia and Ukraine, by the way, Ukraine has put in its bid to become a NATO ally. They want NATO membership. They've also put in their application for EU or European Union membership. And so when they did that, Russia sees some of their former Soviet bloc countries starting to join the West in those treaties. And by the way, in NATO, in the NATO treaty, there's a one of the articles called Article 5, which states that if there's an attack on one NATO country, it's an attack on all NATO countries, and therefore we're required, every NATO country is required then to jump in and defend militarily that country. And so if Ukraine were to join NATO, just like Lithuania and Estonia did, then what would happen is we could then put troop presence, like we've done in the rest of them, we could then move troops and equipment into Ukraine right up against their border, as we've done in some of their other countries. So you see that there's not much left. You got Belarus, you got Ukraine, you got Crimea, Moldova, you got some of those that are still left there on that front. And so Russia then says, okay, you know what? We can't let this happen. So in 99, they made a deal with Belarus. And some think it's a puppet government in Belarus, but nonetheless, they've got a treaty with Belarus, basically assigning them as a state of Russia. And even in the current crisis in Ukraine, the current war in Ukraine, Belarus has allowed Russian troops and equipment to flow through Belarus and attack. In fact, the attack on the capital, Ukraine capital of Kyiv, most of the troops and equipment have been coming through Belarus to get to Kyiv. And so Belarus is essentially taken out of the picture for NATO membership, and the West has lost that in our chess game. Georgia in 2008, another former Soviet bloc country, Russia invaded Georgia. And I'm not going to get into that one, but you can Google that if you want. Basically, they invaded Georgia without even firing a shot. They used cyber weapons during 2008 invasion, and they shut down their power grid. They shut down all the ATMs, gas stations, all of that stuff, and basically just moved in without hardly any fight at all. That was a very big shock to most countries, including the United States. We didn't have much of a cyber presence back in 08. And so that woke us up. And so the United States started building a cyber army after that invasion. That was the first time we'd seen something like that on the global stage. And then, of course, in 2014, Russia moves to take over Crimea, which they did in the Black Sea. And then, of course, we all know what has happened in the last month with Ukraine, of them launching an attack into Ukraine to take it over. So you can see the chess game here in Europe, as we have, the United States and Western allies, have moved east towards Russia, and now Russia is trying to move to block those. So it's important to see that and understand that if Russia were to do this to us, and I'm not defending, please understand that this is not a political discussion, it's not a political statement, but we do have to understand our enemy. If we're going to defend ourselves or defeat our enemy, we need to understand how they feel and how they think. So you have to put yourself in their shoes sometimes to understand it. If Russia were to put troops or equipment in, let's say, Canada or Mexico, or I don't know, put some missiles down in Cuba, what would we do, right? How would we feel if they started moving in close to us? What if they did just some military naval exercises off the East Coast or the West Coast? I don't think we would like it too much. I think we would move to defend ourselves as well in that space. And so you can kind of see then why the Russian people, Russian oligarchs, and folks like that defend what they're doing, because you wonder why they would take such a financial hit, which they are. While they would take such a hit on the world stage from so many countries around the world, they're taking a bloodbath in the media, politically, financially. You wonder why. Well, this is why. And so I think when you see all of that, then you understand why they would do this. And then hopefully you'll also understand, if any of you have seen any of the interviews with Vladimir Putin, he said early on, we didn't start this. The United States started this. They launched the first offensive. And what this is what he's talking about right here is, we've moved east. They believe we started it. Okay, so there's a little history lesson. Let's move into cyber. So what's that got to cyber attacks, and what's that got to do with you and your family or even North Mississippi? Well, cyber weapons have now become part of the arsenal. They have figured out ways. When I say they, I'm not just talking about Russia and our enemies. I'm even talking about us, NSA, National Security Agency here in the United States. We are all developing cyber weapons to use against each other. And we've seen some of these cyber attacks over the last few years do some pretty devastating things. And so that's become part of the war effort. Fortunately, so far, knock on wood, we haven't seen that in the Ukraine war yet. We do believe that we're going to, but we haven't yet. For instance, a number of years ago, there was a cyber weapon that was developed called NotPetya. I won't get into that in the details, but that was one of the big cyber weapons. It wasn't just a cyber attack, but an actual cyber weapon that destroyed so many major company computers, servers, and applications that was launched back then. I think it was 2017, 2018. In 2020, we saw a Russian terrorist group called Wizard Spotter. Some of you guys may have remembered this. They were going to launch a cyber attack on the U.S. election system. Again, this is not a political statement, whatever you fall left or right. The Russians were trying to affect our elections in a negative way. And they were going to try to attack our election systems, but DOD and NSA, CIA, caught wind of it, figured it out, and with the help of some U.S. companies like Microsoft and Cisco and others, took down some of the infrastructure they were going to use to attack us. Of course, they weren't happy with that, though. The Russian terrorists were not happy about that. So what little infrastructure they had left, they turned their sights to the U.S. healthcare system, and they attacked us. We have to remember, I say this in new employee orientation all the time, that in healthcare, we do not understand, I don't think, truly our value to our communities and what role we play, how critical we are. The United States, if you go out and you Google this, the United States has what's called 16 sectors of critical infrastructure for our country. Healthcare is one of those critical infrastructure categories. We are critical to our communities. It's very vital to our, we are very vital to our community. Russia understands this. Hackers understand this. And that's when they come after us. And so they launched that attack. And of course, some of you may remember this. And they took down over 400 U.S. healthcare systems. What I mean by take them down, some of them, they fried every system they had, every computer, every server, every medical device. There were CAT scan machines, MRIs, other things, just literally fried them. Pretty awesome weapons they used, fried everything. There was even a hospital that in California that the cost to rebuild everything would have been $60 million. They couldn't afford to do that. And so they went out of business. December 31st of 2020, they just shut their doors and closed for good. Pretty devastating attack on U.S. healthcare. We've seen them hit our oil pipelines cyber-wise. Again, these are cyber attacks. In 2020, this one is important. In 2020, they also launched a cyber attack on SolarWinds. Now, SolarWinds is a software company, if you will, or a software tool that is very widely used by IT companies such as ourselves. And just about every major company in the world, every major government in the world uses SolarWinds to run their networks. So Russians knew this. And so instead of trying to attack the company directly, so for instance, like us, if I was a hacker, I'm going to try to attack North Mississippi Health Services. Oh, wait, they've got a pretty robust cybersecurity program and cybersecurity team, and they got all these tools, and then they're trying to hack in and can't get in. Here's what I'll do. I'll attack their third party software or their third party vendor. Now let me infect them, and I know their vendors have access to their network. So if I can get a hack into that vendor who doesn't do security very well, then I now have a foothold into their network because we make these connections so that our vendors can have access. And that's what they did with SolarWinds. They attacked SolarWinds, they infected the software. SolarWinds didn't know it. And then when folks like us either load that software on our computers or on our servers or on our network, or just update them, then they have full access. Now hackers had access into our computers, even though we had done a good job with security. That is why we, for some of you may or may not know, we do what's called vendor risk assessments on every new vendor that we try to do business, that we think about doing business with. We look at the product, we look at the company to say, does the company have security program? Do they take security seriously? What are they doing in security? because we know that the enemy goes after third parties in order to get to us. And by the way, some of this is, Russia doesn't care about hacking in here and getting PHIs. If you're thinking, why would they want to hack into us? It's about political, economic, those kind of things. They're not trying to make money off of us, but we are their arch enemy. We're their rival in the world. We're a world power. They don't care about you and your family specifically, except for one thing and one thing only. You're an American. We forget that sometimes in America, that we have enemies, and our enemies will destroy us simply because we're an American. It's nothing to do with you personally, nothing to do with the North Mississippi Health Services specifically, or Tupelo, Mississippi, but the fact that we're an American. That's it, bottom line. And the last bullet I want to talk about is propaganda. There's been a lot of news about this in the last 4 or 5 years, and a lot of angst, I know, but we have to, there's some things that are just facts, right? Don't care how you spin it, there's some things that are just truth. And Russia has a massive fake news campaign. I mean, a massive engine that they're running on social media to divide us against each other. And if they can sow discord in our country, they will do it. And that's one of their arsenals. So cyber attacks, not necessarily just a weapon that they use, like destroying a computer, but if they can destroy our unity, if they can destroy our democracy, then they win. And so they will run ads pro and against President Biden. They'll run ads pro and against President Trump. They'll run it for any back and forth. They don't really care. They're not backing one or not backing another. It's all just for one purpose only, and that is to distract us, to divide us, and to destroy us. That's their aim and their goal, period. We need to understand that we're feeding into that narrative. Now, let's talk a little bit about what do we do? So, okay, now we know the enemy, we know that they're very similar to us. We know their tactics and why they're doing it. We know that we would do it if we had an opportunity. We'd defend ourselves in the same way. So what do we do individually? What's our government doing? So as I said earlier in 08, when they launched the cyber war against Georgia, we stood up, the United States stood up CyberCom or Cyber Command and started training cyber warriors. And I was one of those, worked for NSA for a number of years, for 10 years. And we built a robust capability to do this. For a long time, we were in the defensive mode, but I can tell you that today we have offensive operations. We have a massive cyber army led by Cyber Command and NSA, and they are doing some pretty robust response against our enemies. That said, that tit for tat, so we go after our enemies in an offensive way, they're going to respond. And we're doing the same thing they're doing. That is, when we say we go after the enemy with cyber, we don't just go after their military or their government. We're going to go after their nuclear power plant. We're going to go after their power grid. We're going to try to shut down the critical infrastructure of their countries to slow them down on whatever thing we're doing. So, for instance, in this Ukraine fight, we're helping Ukraine. We're not going to put troops on the ground, but we can help provide a slowdown by disrupting that flow of information to their troops on the ground, or maybe disrupt the flow of weapons and food and other things to those troops that are on the ground in Ukraine. And they do that through cyber capabilities. So we have a pretty good response capabilities in the US government today. However, the difference between Russia, China, North Korea, and other countries, and the United States is that we're a democracy. So in Russia or China, they control the state media, they control the healthcare system, they control the internet, they control those companies, a lot of companies, oil and gas, different things. There's very few quote unquote private companies. And so in America though, our private companies, our private industries, have a responsibility to protect ourselves. And so we, North Mississippi Health Services, and you need to understand the threat and what we can do. And so we ask you to be cautious about what you download, what you click on, phishing, those P-H-I-S-H, those phishing emails you get either at home or at work are some of the number one ways in which those cyber weapons are deployed onto networks. And so we ask you to be very cautious. If you're not familiar with how to discover which one's a phishing email, go to our website, cybersecurity.nmhs.net. We have some pictures there that shows you what a phishing email looks like and how you can tell a real one versus a fake one. But we need you in the fight. Just like in Ukraine, they're defending their own cities, the individuals, they're equipping them. We've got a lot of tools and tips that we help you guys to learn about cybersecurity. We want to equip you guys, equip each and every one of our frontline workers in this fight, because we can't do it alone. My team can't do it alone. IT can't do it alone. We need each and every one of us to defend. And how we defend that is awareness. Somebody calls and asks you questions about what kind of computer you have, or what kind of printer you have, or even just your name and your job description or your title. They can use that against us, believe it or not. Be careful what you give out to people. Be careful what you click on. Be careful the websites you go to. Try to stay focused. We're not saying that during lunch or breaks that you can't go surfing and things, but we're asking that you be cognizantly aware of what you're clicking on, what you're downloading. Be careful about plugging in thumb drives and things like that. Also, be aware that that if you deal with vendors and contractors that are on the outside and need access to our computers and our networks, that you work with IT and IT security so we can vet them and make sure that they have security on their end as well. So we need each and every one of you guys to help us in this fight.
How are our third-party vendors, such as rehab apps on iPads, coming along with making their cybersecurity more robust, equal to the hospital security?
Oh, great question. Thank you for that. So yeah, so our third-party vendors, and I can tell you I've been doing this in private sector now for 9 years. And I can tell you that over the past 9 years, I've seen a huge growth in our vendors and vendors taking cybersecurity more seriously. Just like healthcare, we've taken it more seriously now. So we've seen our vendors step up, and as Bruce and our legal team and myself, we require in our contracts now and some of the terms and conditions, we require a lot of security be put on their end. We also, our cybersecurity council that meets, some of the executives that meet and help govern our cybersecurity initiatives, we bring to them those risk assessments. And if we feel like that company is not doing the right things, we do turn them down. We say, yeah, we probably shouldn't do business with this one or that one. But if that company is willing to put in the effort on cybersecurity, then we give them a green light. And of course, we don't just wink, wink and let them go. We do monitor them going forward. The iPad kind of stuff, the smaller little mobile apps are something that's really starting to pop up. And David, of course, knows this very well, as we've been working with his team on getting a lot of those mobile apps on iPads for use, and I think we definitely need it, and we're excited about being able to partner with you guys on that. But those are a lot less secure, because anybody can create an app and throw it on app stores today, and they're not a big company, usually don't have contracts, they might have some terms and conditions. A lot harder, a lot scarier for my team for those little mobile apps versus, say, a big software that you're going to put on a computer or on a server. But we can definitely still vet them and monitor them. But a lot of the mobile apps come and go so quickly that cybersecurity is just not in the forefront for those developers. Okay, let me just end by saying that we do have a website, cybersecurity.nmhs.net, and I will say that there are, at the very top, there's a tools and tips. Those tools and tips are for you at home. You can get to that website at home. There's a lot of free stuff on there. Like, one of my pet peeves is antivirus. The government requires that antivirus companies give you, an individual, free antivirus for home use. You don't have to go pay for it. Go out there and check out some of those free resources that we provided links for. They're not the only ones out there, but we definitely gave some examples of some that we recommend. Go check that out. How do you protect your children online? How do you protect your cell phone or your tablet? Go check out those resources on our website. Also, there's a link to our blog there, which is fishmarket.nmhs.net. I mentioned that earlier about how to tell about phishing. We try to blog information about phishing and other vulnerabilities and risk on there. And of course, like Diana said, anytime you have any questions after this, you can always email me at palexander@nmhs.net, or any of my team members would be glad to ask. It does not have to be North Mississippi related. It can just be cybersecurity, things for home. We definitely want to make sure you and your family have the resources you need to protect yourself. So reach out to us if you don't see something on our website and you're curious, let us know. Okay, well, thanks you guys for joining, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you for listening. We're here to support you and are so glad you chose to spend time with us today. We hope this podcast helped you understand what Connected feels like. Please don't forget to check back at Casthost for more episodes.